Welcome back. The search for a particular hidden treasure is a growing trend among New Englanders. Not wearing eye patches or brandishing swords, but with rubber stamps and notebooks. Their quest is for waterproof containers called letterboxes. Box hunters often solve complex literary or historical puzzles to find their caches, which distinguishes letterboxing from the high-tech hobby of geocaching, which uses GPS to uncover the booty. Letterboxing originated in England and made the hop across the pond, thanks to a New Hampshireite. Reporter Nancy Greenlees played the game of hide-and-seek with some Americans in Ireland.
A cold rain spits on a car ferry in County Clare, Ireland. James and Nancy Hartigan of Virginia are huddled together in the car with their two children. They've been visiting relatives in Ireland, and on this blustery day, plan to hide a letterbox.
It's just kind of a neat way of connecting with people, you know, as opposed to sending emails and whatnot. It's something you have to travel to go get it.
A typical letterbox is weatherproof and contains a hand-carved rubber stamp and a notebook. A letterboxer hides it in a public place and posts clues and directions for finding it on the internet. Those who find the box use the stamp to mark their personal notebook. In the letterbox's notebook, they'll write a few lines and leave an imprint of their own stamp before putting it back in its hiding place for the next treasure hunter to find. Randy Hall, author of The Letterboxer's Companion, says the pastime began in bog-covered parkland in Devon, England, in 1854.
It was started in Dartmoor, where a gentleman left his calling card out on the moors and said, anyone to find this, also do the same, or write a little note, that sort of thing.
Other boxes started appearing with cryptic directions spread through word of mouth. Stamps eventually replaced cards. For more than a century, letterboxing was limited to a few enthusiasts on the moors. In the late 1980s, New Hampshireite David Sobel was doing educational research in England and would often walk the moors. He kept seeing people who were obviously searching for something.
They'd be peering intently at little guidebooks, or they'd have compasses in their hands, and they'd be tromping off in directions that didn't really make any sense to me because they weren't really on trails. And so it was this kind of emergent thing, like, what's going on here?
The Antioch University New England professor had created treasure hunts around Keene and in Pisgah State Park to teach children about the land and its history. He started asking around about these secretive searches.
To get involved, I had to find my way to some person's little house in a subdivision. And it felt a little bit like going to a speakeasy during Prohibition, you know, where I had to find this person who actually gave me the kind of the mimeographed copy of the guide to letterboxes. And then once I got that, then I was off on my own.
Yet he never intended to be the father of U.S. letterboxing. A friend was running the organization Vital Communities in the Upper Valley and was looking for a way to unify the area's towns, an event that would be both educational and recreational. Sobel suggested letterboxing. He says it's the ideal counterpoint to the computer games and electronic entertainment that distance us from the communities in which we live.
If you spend all your time in indoor worlds on screens, you don't care about your own place, and so you don't participate in conservation commissions, and you don't do roadside cleanups, and you don't join your church organization.
Vital Communities created the Valley Quest program, brain teaser treasure hunts for discovering a place's natural and cultural heritage. The idea took off, becoming the model for parks and schools nationwide. 10-year-old Sean Hartigan is learning about his places, whether in his hometown of Ashland, Virginia, or Ireland.
I definitely like the whole little letterbox thing. I'm actually kind of hoping for, like, first next time we come, like, 8 or 9 notes in there.
But first, the Hartigans have to hide their box. A pit stop threatens to become the final stop when the car's tires start slipping in the mud.
Come forward a little bit, straighten it out. Got it.
Done.
Such setbacks are part of the letterboxing adventure, whether hiding or seeking a box. There's no rainbow that guides letterboxers directly to this pot of gold. In fact, the Hartigans have only a cell phone for a flashlight when they arrive after dark at the resting place for their box and many of James Hartigan's ancestors.
Where are we?
This is Kilcarran Cemetery. The gravestones, yeah, you watch your step. The gravestones would be several hundred years old.
The family wedges their letterbox into the cemetery wall. Another letterbox joins the thousands scattered throughout the world. Andrea Wyman, an associate professor at Edinburgh University of Pennsylvania, has designed a course on letterboxing for grandparents and their grandchildren. She says not only do they exercise outdoors, they also work their brains.
When you're trying to help someone find your letterbox, you're editing, reading, and reviewing everything that you write down on your clue list so that you can help someone come and find your hidden book.
Her 11-year-old daughter, Hannah, says it's a cool activity that doesn't involve computers.
We went to this park, and then it said, from this certain tree, take 42 third-grader steps. And I was a third-grader at that time, so I've got to figure out where the letter box was.
She stamped the box with her snowflake stamp and walked away with a souvenir and a fond memory. The hidden treasure for her, the Hartigans, and the many New Englanders who letterbox is in the hunt. For Word of Mouth, I'm Nancy Greenlease, County Clare, Ireland.
For photos of Nancy's letterboxing adventure in Ireland, go to wordofmouthradio.org.
Are you there, Satan? It's me, Madison. I thought I saw you today and waved madly like some fevering groupie trying to get your attention. Hell continues to unfold as an interesting, exciting place, and I've begun to learn some rudimentary demonology so I won't feel like an idiot forever. Really, there's almost no time to feel homesick.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a...
That's a passage and pretty much the premise of the new novel Damned by Chuck Palahniuk, a writer best known for his darkly funny, often grotesque, character-driven novels like Fight Club, Choke, and Rant. I'll be speaking with Chuck at Writers on a New England Stage tonight. That's an NHPR series with the Music Hall in Portsmouth and River Run Books. We'll broadcast the interview next week here on Word of Mouth, but now is your chance to ask Chuck about his work, his life, and maybe even the colorful decor of hell. You can post your questions on our Facebook page or on Twitter, and we'll do our best to get your inquiries onto the stage. That's assuming I haven't fainted. Apparently, Chuck's live readings have a way of weirding people into unconsciousness. Palahniuk's Hell is the eternal home of Loki, Pan, and the rest of the pantheon of deposed deities. Also cavorting in the mounds of dandruff and rivers of, you know, stuff are Charles Darwin, Liberace, Marilyn Monroe, and John Lennon. Wherever you think John Lennon should be spending infinity, the former Beatle is the subject of a new book by Tim Riley. Tim will be interviewed by Word of Mouth's own Rebecca Lavoie tonight at the Red River Theaters in Concord. The event is in conjunction with the Backstage Pass show at the Courier, and fittingly, Tim's book pulls the curtain back on Lennon's early life, especially, which may not have been as much working-class hero as Lennon portrayed it. It is a free event, but they do suggest reserving seats. Details for that are at wordofmouthradio.org. I'm Virginia Prescott, celebrating the many ideas and things to do on this side of the earthly plane. Please do join us next week for more Word of Mouth, or hear highlights from the program on Saturday at noon. Segments from today and every day can be heard at our website or as podcasts. You can find that at wordofmouthradio.org.